Nearly 1,000 years ago, the Domesday Book records a village called Henderskelf, somewhere near this spot in Yorkshire. No one knows exactly where it was, but our best clue is that it was demolished to make way for that. Castle Howard, one of the most impressive and best-known stately homes in England. When it was built in the year 1700, the third Earl of Carlisle didn't want a village anywhere near his new pile, so down came the drafty old medieval castle, down came the church, and down came the village houses so they wouldn't spoil his view. Time Team have come here to pick over the debris left by the Earl's demolition team. We want to find out where the village was, and we want to find out what happened to its inhabitants as their houses were demolished around them. And we've got just 3 days to do it. Knowing that there was a village here and knowing where to look for it are two different things. Castle Howard's extensively landscaped park and gardens cover 1,000 acres. So, where do we start? Our first clue is a patch of uneven ground right next to the house.
Mick?
Yeah?
This whole lawn is covered in lumps and bumps.
I know, yeah.
Do you reckon they could be indications of where the village was?
Well, they could be, yeah. We've got this early map of, 1694, something yep. like that. And that shows the village, and one of our first jobs is going to be to tie up this plan with what's here now on the ground, because this is before the big house and the gardens were laid out.
This 1694 map shows in great detail the layout of our village in the last decade of its life. It could be the key to our success. But it looks as if interpreting it is going to be tricky.
So, Richard, where are we on that map?
Well, I think just there. That house, yeah, that red block.
Well, I think we're probably where those two lines are, but we're not far apart.
Well, yeah. West. Whatever the map says, what the gardeners have found around the lumps and bumps suggests they might be a good place to start.
Clearly marked.
The area contains loads and loads and loads of medieval pottery.
Oh,
I mean, look at this lot. 13th, 14th yeah. century, green glaze stuff, including wasters.
Oh.
Rubbish from pottery production. And this isn't just any old shed. This is from a huge, great vessel. So you're not eating porridge out of this.
Yeah. OK, Mick, what's the strategy?
Well, I think we've got the geophys going in at the moment on this area of mounds. We could pick a mound and dig it anyway, but I'd like to wait and just see what the geophys comes up with. And then we'll pop a hole in there if you're happy with us.
I think I can handle that.
Simon, this isn't just a posh house. It's your home, isn't it?
That's true, absolutely.
So how do you feel about us being here, crawling all over it for 3 days?
Well, I think there'd be enough question marks about where the old castle was and where the village was and where the church was too for so long that actually this is very exciting from our point of view. Careful with the lawns. Put everything back properly and neatly.
Like you tell Phil, because I'm not.
While geophys survey the lumps and bumps for any traces of a village, in our magnificent incident room in the castle, Stuart's getting to grips with the original 1694 map.
Right, this is...
What's the material?
It's vellum.
Oh. 17th century jigsaw puzzle.
It is. Right, and there you have Henderskelf.
So it's like the whole village has just appeared in front of me. It's fantastic.
This beautiful map gives us a number of targets. The road through the village and the houses along it, as well as the old castle of Henderskelf and its outbuildings, and finally, the church. Stuart's task is to work out exactly where they all are on the ground today. The current interpretation has the village here. Henderskelf Castle appears to be unreachable under Castle Howard, but some of the houses along the street appear to coincide with the lumps and bumps. Or at least they did, until Stuart reinterpreted the map and moved the whole village 50 metres further west.
If Stu's right, You've not been waiting for me, have you?
No, but carry on anyway.
Carry on. Well, that's the mag.
Hang on, I've no idea where we are. Where are we in the ground?
You're here.
Right.
This is the area with the humps and bumps. The track behind us is there. OK?
Yeah.
So the pipeline running along the edge. It's very noisy. It could be lots of bonfires, rubbish.
Right.
It could be brick and tile. Or it might just be pot wasters.
Right. And now you've just said you don't want to put in a trench here.
No, what I think is, if Stuart's right, looking at the early map, then more or less from here to that hedge is where the outbuildings of the castle, whatever it was by 1690 was, and the village really starts from here and goes that way.
Oh.
So if we were...
So what if we...
Well, no, the point is, if we were only interested in the village properties, we'd be looking that way. I mean, I think we should do both. I think we should go for one of your hot spots that might be castle or might be village, but I think we should also dig a trench somewhere out there on the basis of the map, even without the geophys, and just see if that's where we've got village stuff. So two trenches.
Quite frankly, I think we ought to get moving. This may look just like a nice little spring natter between four people, but if you look around here, you will see all these people waiting to start digging. So, can we dig?
Yep. About time to.
So, trench one goes into a geophys hotspot in the lumps and bumps. And to keep Stuart happy, trench two goes into what he thinks is a house further down the street. Simon Howard doesn't want machines ripping up his lawns, so we're going to have to strip off the turf by hand. Even though we've brought extra diggers, it's going to limit the number and size of the trenches we open.
We don't want the turf too thin, we just need it a little bit thicker than normal, about 2 inches. Look at that.
That's not paving, is it?
Perhaps we don't need machines here. Exactly 1 minute and 24 seconds after the turf came off in trench one, Phil hits archaeology.
It's a lovely, lovely bit of... A slab of stone, that is.
Oh, look.
I mean, what's it got there? That's a decorator. It's a moulded
piece. It is. It is like leaves or something, isn't it?
It's a moulded piece. There's a line down there, and there's also a line...
Down the other side.
On the other side.
So presumably,
it's a facing stone, a bit of decoration on the front of the building, isn't it?
This dressed stone doesn't look as though it's part of an ordinary village house. So could it be part of the original castle? And is it a foretaste of riches to come?
It's about 1700.
While the archaeologists continue their hunt for the structure of the village, Carenza's gone in search of the people who actually lived here and the man who brought it all to a sudden end.
Chris, given that Henderskelf's mentioned in the Doomsday Book, it must have been in existence for at least 700 years or so, and then more or less overnight, it vanishes. Who was in charge here when that happened?
Charles Howard, 3rd Earl of Carlisle, the builder of Castle Howard.
And this is him, is it?
This is him, a portrait of about 1704 by Sir Godfrey Kneller.
So what sort of person do we think he was?
Well, an ambitious man, anxious to pursue his political career. Around about 1700, he gains all those important political posts, First Lord of the Treasury, Privy Councillor, Gentleman of the King's Bedchamber, and so on.
And he was still only in his 30s?
That's right, just turned 30. But it's a very brief career because it stumbles after the death of William III. He's effectively cast out into a political wilderness during the reign of Queen Anne. So that allows him to transfer more of his attentions back to this great project here in Yorkshire.
At Castle Howard, we're within 10 miles of one of the most famous and most investigated deserted medieval village sites in the country, Warren Percy. The village was abandoned in the 15th century after suffering terribly in the Black Death. Originally, it had been a late Saxon or Norman planned village laid out along a street and could be a model for our village. To find out if it is, we need to get right back to the origins of Henderskelf. Though it's recorded in the Doomsday Book of 1086, the village actually may not be as old as that.
The name itself doesn't necessarily tell us as a village, it tells us as a settlement. Does it refer to this place or does it refer to just a single farm somewhere?
If we're going to get a village, what's it going to look like?
I think that's a very interesting question because there are so many examples where a big house like this removes the local village to, you know, get rid of it from the scene. And it seems to vary according to when that's done. If it's done early on, then the tendency is to take the buildings down, let it grass over and leave it. Whereas later on, in the 18th and 19th century, they remove every last trace, every last foundation stone. So here, we're sort of round about the time when they might have left it or they might have removed the whole lot. So we might have a bit of each.
Did the Earl's demolition squad leave anything for us to find? Will we discover exactly how old the village was? To help answer these questions, the search for the village is going to be widened. According to the map, the main street continues from the area where we've started digging into this walled garden. That's very good news for us, because we can use a machine here. But first, geophys are doing what they can to guide us in.
How's it going, John?
We've actually got a few problems.
Oh, come on, this must be the most perfect place to geophys ever.
Well, it's fine for the magnetics. I mean, we'll see what we get, but it's full of this.
Oh, yeah, it used to be an adventure playground, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look at the ground surface. It's all over.
Why is this a problem?
Well, we just can't get a good electrical contact, so the resistance survey is really a non-starter.
Will you get anything?
Well, the problem also with... We've got pipes coming out of this, pipes from the toilets, so... I mean, the magnetics may come up with something, but I'm not that hopeful, to be honest.
In which case, what do we do?
Well, Stuart's convinced that the road must come across this line from the map evidence, so if we don't get anything, then put a trench across it. Go on the map evidence, dare I say it.
But John's not ready to hand over to Stuart yet. He's going to have one more go with the magnetometer. The shine's also gone off our castle trench among the lumps and bumps. The elaborately carved piece of masonry isn't attached to a building and was probably dumped here from somewhere else. The only feature in the trench dates from after the destruction of the village. They need to go deeper. But trench two, where Stuart thought we'd find a house, has produced more encouraging news.
David, there's a room you found something. Oh, great, you have as well.
We have. We've definitely got a surface of some description. I mean, if you look at the way the very large stones are sort of like, they're almost round side up.
Well, some of these are very roundy, aren't they?
They've got wear on them, I think.
Right.
Looks convincing that it is a surface, but what kind of surface?
I mean, obviously, what I'm interested in is whether we've got a road coming through here.
Well, I would like to work out, really, if it is going to be a road, the direction the road takes.
Yeah.
Because that will obviously answer a lot of more questions.
Well, yeah, exactly.
If we have it running straight up
that
here,
way,
that makes your argument for.
Yeah.
But it could still, of course, be turning because there's a gateway just there.
Ah, because you've got the gate there, yes.
Would you be amenable if we just stuck a small 3x3 in there to see if the road is going that way?
Why don't you try that and see what it looks like.
While we're struggling with the last years of the village, Carenza's delving into its very origins. What does the Doomsday Book say?
It's very thin, which is not unexpected for a northern reference in Doomsday. It simply tells us that there was a certain amount of land that was taxable and who held it at that point.
But it does give us an early spelling, doesn't it? Hildreskjelf. What does that mean?
Well, the first element seems to be a Scandinavian female name, and the second element seems to be shelf or seat, which may refer to a topographical element, or it may refer to an agricultural regime. It's not
and
quite
clear.
And it's
a Viking name, of course.
It's a Viking name, indeed.
So this was the land owned by a Viking woman?
Yes, indeed. That's what the implication is.
The problem is that apart from what may be the road in Trench 2, we still haven't found any trace of Hildra's seat. All eyes are now on the walled garden, where we left John Gator desperately hunting for houses.
What about the geophys, John?
Well, it's a bit disappointing. The magnetics don't seem to have worked, so...
You've got nothing really there, have you, that we could target?
Well, I'd be struggling.
Yeah.
This is done.
Oh, that's
what about
really
you, Stuart?
Cool.
Well, I think we might be able to help here, Tony. We've got very good correlation between the 1694 map, the modern map, and where we are in the real world.
Yeah.
And the roadway goes through the corner of the walled garden with properties alongside it. So I think we've got much more latitude in that corner for finding one of these properties.
Do we know who lives here?
Yeah, this is Ralph Kendall's house, and there's his house with two big chimney stacks on the top.
So tomorrow, we're going to go into the walled garden and see if we can find the home of Ralph Kendall of High Street Henderskelf. Beginning of day two, and I'm on the roof of Castle Howard. We're here to look for the lost village of Henderskelf, which was demolished when they built this stately pile. Yesterday, we put two trenches in, down there where the flowers are, but we don't think we found the village there. So today we're going to follow Stuart's hunch and dig over where that big chimney is in the walled garden.
Kerry? Hi, mate. How's it going?
We've found Adventure Playground from the 1980s.
Oh, right. I didn't realise we were looking for that.
Well, we weren't, but we keep finding all the post holes for the timber structures, and we've got one of the posts
over
there.
Oh, right, climbing frame or something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
But what about archaeology? Because this all looks like natural clay to me right the way through.
Well, we're hoping the road should be about halfway along the trench here.
Right.
And the buildings further back, and that's where we're working towards.
Where Ian is now.
Where Ian is now. But yeah. At the moment, we're not really getting any features, but we are getting a lot of medieval pottery.
So what sort of stuff have you got?
Well, it's over here. We've got some...
Oh, right. OK, that's nice, isn't it?
It's all pretty certain. It's all good medieval.
Yeah? And this is just from this bit you've got here?
Just from this bit, and it's getting more concentrated as we go further up.
So, some early promise, but plenty more work if we're to find the house of Ralph Kendall in Trench 3. Until we find a recognisable bit of the village on the ground, we can't tell how reliable the overlay of the 1694 map is. To try to nail it down, Stuart, Henry and Geoffiz are pulling together to search for the church on the north lawn. Trench 1, looking for the castle, still hasn't delivered anything to tell us whether we're on target. This is the trench where we found that fantastic piece of masonry at the beginning of day one, and it looked like it was going to be the shortest time team ever.
Yeah.
But we haven't found much else, have we?
No. Well, it's a very interesting trench, though. There's a lot of archaeology in here with lots of phases, and Catherine's busy sorting that out at the moment.
What have you got?
Well, we started off with this big wall coming through along here. We've got this later large pit in here and this huge passable post hole at the bottom with these small two on either side.
So the plan is to take the rest of this soil away on each side when she's recorded it and see if the natural we see there has got more post holes in it.
Oh, so this isn't finished?
Oh, no, no, we're only halfway through this, and it's our best indication at the moment that there are posts that belong to either something to do with the castle buildings or possibly village buildings that are buried lower down.
But what I don't understand is last night you said to me, tomorrow we're going to head off to the walled garden and dig there because it's going to give us much more opportunity.
Yeah. Well, we've done that. We've got a long trench in there.
Yeah, but you didn't say anything about this.
No, no. Well, we put this one in because this is another named property on the map and we thought we'd see whether there was anything left of the buildings that go with this property.
Trench 4 has been placed exactly where Henry and Stuart have calculated that George Campbellman's house should be. And what have you got, Phil?
Well, we're really quite excited because look at that. It looks as though we've actually got a very compacted floor surface.
Yeah.
And we've actually seen it. You see it down in that void?
Yeah.
We know that it goes to, I think at least that depth. It looks like we've got a very, very good floor surface.
How much of it have you got?
Well, that's the interesting thing. You see, we think we're actually in one of the houses of the village.
This is on the 1694 map.
That's right. Now, Henry plotted the position of this building this morning. Yeah. And you see that shovel over there?
This one here?
That's right.
Yeah.
And then there's a corresponding one over there.
And you're saying that that would be one building?
Yeah. Those are the corners, the front corners of the house. So this is the floor. I come through to here. This, we think, is where the wall is. And funnily enough, the floor is actually dying out. So literally, I would be walking through the front wall out onto the street.
So is it like a very long, narrow building?
It's a long, narrow building. So back again, I'm back inside it again.
Is it producing any fines?
Well, all the soil above it is pretty much 18th century. We've got the top of that rather nice...
Oh, that's good,
That's right. And we've got this George coin, which we think is probably about George II, so sort of mid-18th century, certainly about the age of the main house.
Yeah.
And, of course, well, as they're waltzing around in the gardens, they're wearing jackets and rather fancy buttons on like that.
So although the finds all date from after the village was dismantled, the floor lies below them and could be our first trace of a house in the village.
Why do
did the third Earl build a completely new house?
He wanted to build new, to be of the moment, employing some of the most exciting architects and craftsmen possible as a statement of his wealth and his power and his aspirations, creating this estate for himself here in Yorkshire.
It must have been hugely expensive.
It was a very expensive project, and the accounts year in, year out, begin to give us some idea of that. Total dispersed in my buildings, gardens, plantations and outworks to mid-1737.
£78,240, two shillings and tenpence.
Don't forget the tenpence.
I mean, how much would that be today?
I would compute roughly that comes out at perhaps 8 million by today's standards, but of course 8 million wouldn't build you Castle Howard and everything around it from scratch by today's standards. I think money went further in those days.
Is there any indication that he had any qualms about removing the village of Henderskelf?
There are no mentions of Henderskelf in these books at all. I mean, so therefore we have to say it really didn't feature in his own mind, I think. As Castle Howard went up, the village came down.
And we still haven't been able to find out exactly where it was. With the map floating around, we were hoping that Trench 2 would finally anchor it by confirming the location of the main village street.
David, so have you got my road then?
No, sorry to disappoint you.
Oh, what's this then?
Well, this is the road here, what we think is the road here, but yeah. As we discussed, we've put in a trench up there,
yep.
And we've had a number of sort of post-medieval surfaces, but no road.
So what do you think this is then?
Well, the only thing I can think is the hunch we had yesterday was that perhaps it's associated with this gate that's behind us.
Some sort of driveway coming out there.
Yes, or maybe just something that was, you know, used as a haulage road.
That's
over there.
Disappointingly, that's now the end of the road for these trenches. Carenza's also drawn a blank looking for records of the village in the Castle Howard archives, so she's broadening her search too. She's off to York. Time for us to catch up with Stuart and Geofiz on the North Lawn.
So have you found the church?
I think we have, Tony. We've got really good evidence from the 1694 map where the site of the church is likely to be. We've set out the churchyard. You see the cane with the hazard tape on there?
Yeah.
One corner there, one corner there, one corner there. That's that triangular shape. Now, within that, the church is shown. And I think it's just in this area here. We've set that out with a couple of pegs where we think that church might be.
And does Geofiz bear that out?
No. Because Stuart's church is there. Now, the only problem I've got is I've got one, two, possibly three targets.
Oh, that looks really good.
But that looks the best.
Two squares, yeah.
That looks like a church to me.
Ask him how far that distance is then, Tony.
25 metres.
25 metres. For 308 years, this village and this church has been lost. Using a series of maps, we've got to within the churchyard and narrowed it down to 20 metres. I'd be happy with that,
wouldn't you? Yes, but if you dug where you said it was, you wouldn't find it.
Oh, we've yet to be proven.
That looks too good, doesn't it?
Let's stay mates. Yeah. Let's stay mates. There is one small problem.
Hello?
Hi, Simon.
Yeah?
It's Tony Robinson here.
Yeah.
Can you spare me 90 seconds or so?
Yeah, sure.
I'm standing on your front lawn, and we're wondering whether you would mind if we put a trench in, because we think we may have found where the village church was.
Right, whereabouts would that be?
Well, you know where your bedroom is?
Yes.
If you're looking out your bedroom window towards your left, about kind of 60 yards away from you.
Right, and that's to the north of the west wing, is it?
Yeah, to the north of the west wing.
Yeah, that sounds okay.
With permission granted, in goes Trench 5 to look for the church on the north lawn. Phil's taken temporary leave of absence from George Campbellman's house to lend a hand. To find out more about the inhabitants of Henderskelf, we're turning to the court records in York, which are one of the few surviving sources of this information. And it looks as if Henderskelf had its fair share of lively characters.
We've got this dispute about doings in George Monkhouse's house, and this is about 1620. In one George Monkhouse's house at Henderskelf, where and when he heard the said Mr. Dent call John Ward naughty harlot and naughty knave.
You call a man a harlot?
You could in this context, yes, yes.
And this was an insult sufficiently strong to be taken to court for it?
Indeed. They were very keen to make sure that their reputations were protected.
Remember this? Time Team's fastest ever find, which we thought might be part of the old castle. How wrong we were.
So this is the nearest parallel we've got on the estate?
That's right. This is frostwork, early to mid-18th century, on this decorative panel on this plinth, meant to simulate icicles, or it's eroded a bit. It's similar to your piece of
stone.
It
looks very similar to it.
It's not identical, though. I think it's more piecemeal than the continuous decoration here.
So you think this has come from the estate?
Certainly. This has come from either another pedestal or plinth, or possibly a summer house or pavilion from the 18th century, but no longer standing.
Right.
In the walled garden, Trench 3 was looking for the street and the house of Ralph Kendall. The trench has now grown enormously, but has it delivered?
We're halfway there. We're doing well.
Right.
As you know, we're supposed to have a building and we're supposed to have a road.
Yep.
Well, we seem to have the edge of the road here.
So the road's somewhere over that way?
It's going all the way back that way.
Right.
Haven't got the other edge yet.
Yeah.
Then that has been cut by this later pipe, as you can see it under there, very clear, very pink.
Oh, that's very obviously a pink strip going right the way through, isn't it?
So it's really cut up a lot of the trench.
Right.
This also cuts this really soft, manky kind of sandstone, which we're interpreting is the front of the building.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to extend it. We need to go back that way, see if we can pick up some more and get some more information.
So Trench 3 may yet deliver part of the village, but it'll need a lot more work before we can tell. On the other side of the wall, Phil's back in Trench 4, busy with what he thought was definitely the house belonging to George Campbellman.
Well, I have to admit, I don't think we've actually got it. This floor, well, we thought it was a floor. It still looks very convincing as a floor. I mean, it's very, very compacted, but I really don't think it is a floor.
Why not?
We've got no walls around it.
But then this site was very thoroughly landscaped and a hugely expensive operation. They could have just taken all the building rubble away for this part of the site.
No, I think if you knocked a building down, a substantial building down, you'd create some sort of demolition rubble. I can only go by the archaeological evidence. I don't care about the maps. They tell me it's here. If it's here, I'll find it. But I don't think we found it yet. I mean, the fact is, we know people were living round here. Kai's got loads and loads of beautiful domestic refuse.
We can say definitely they were living here, or at least they were throwing the rubbish away here. We've got lots of bits and pieces, animal bone, so we can see what they've been eating. We've got oyster shell. And we've got this, which is a horn core, which shows they're preparing horn to be used in things like knife handles, maybe, at some point. This is all very late medieval, post-medieval. Even more exciting, we have got a very special find that's come out as well. Now, this is slightly earlier in date, but it's an amazing piece of either tile or platter. It's glazed. It's got this beautiful script there, which is black letter script, and that puts it in about the 14th century. It's a very exciting find.
It's frustrating. People were obviously living somewhere around here, but the village seems invisible. Perhaps this gent can spare his time machine. Alternatively, can the castle trench help? Catherine's been slaving away unnoticed, and now she's extended it and gone below yesterday's post-medieval wall.
Well, Catherine's taken half of this away and they're now working on the other half.
Catherine, have we got anything here?
Well, we thought we had some beam slots in here, but they actually turned out to be rabbit runs, unfortunately.
What about this end?
Well, we're taking it to an extent, but we've actually found a wall.
Oh, right.
What's the wall?
This is our wall, and we've got at least 3 to 4 courses of this wall.
Have you got any dating material around it?
Well, we've had a couple of bits of pottery that look about 12th to 14th century, so it's still quite early.
So, Mick, could this be a wall from our village?
Probably, yeah.
We've had a lot of probablys, though, haven't we? Probably. We've had probablys in here and possiblys. We had a possibly in Phil's trench, and that turned out to be a probably possibly, except it's... probably nothing at all. And even over there in the walled garden where
that's looking better up there. I mean, we've got what is probably a wall coming across it.
What is probably a wall?
Yeah, well, it's the trenches. The trench isn't wide enough. We're going to have to widen the trench to see.
But we've got nothing tangible. We're at the end of day two and we have nothing tangible.
Yeah, but the problem is when you build a thing like that, you do an awful lot of landscape alteration. I mean, you could argue that what we've got is very good given the size of that place. And the other thing is, you know, we've only got a few little slit trenches in. Warren Percy up on the hill. They spent 40 years there digging about 6 or 8 weeks every summer with up to 100 people. And that's the same sort of size settlement as this.
This is it. This is the best we're going to get.
Oh, this is the bedrock here, isn't it?
Yeah.
That over there, I think we're still very high up with dumps there, and the other one we're going to have to extend. And, you know, given the time we've got, I think that's what we should do. You look very unconvinced.
It's not I'm unconvinced. You've just told me that Warren Percy took 40 years to dig. 40 years. We've got 3 days. Oy vey.
Oui, it's difficult.
The end of day two approaches. We've got very little to show for it, and Mick tells me that this may be as good as it gets. Then, just as I want to lie down in a darkened room, word comes of a miraculous discovery. Mick?
Yeah? Down here, Tom. Come and look
really
at this.
There's bounds down here.
You're
there?
Not going to believe this.
What you got?
We've got the most fantastic discovery down here, Tony.
And this is this? Yep.
This is a drawing by Nicholas Hawksmoor of Greenwich.
It's not Castle Howard.
No, it's Greenwich, where the dome for Castle Howard, the idea came from. Yeah. But I think you're going to be more interested with what's on the reverse.
Look at that.
What's this? This is a plan of the village that we're looking for. It's a much more detailed plan than the one we've been using already. It shows the layout of the buildings, all the little outbuildings, on. This is a fantastic map. It isn't colour, but it's fantastic.
Do we know who drew this?
It's Hawksmoor again.
Well, it's very nice of him to do it, but how does it advance our dig?
Well, what it does is allows us to basically work the layout of the village out, compare it with the 1694 map, put that against the modern mapping and see where these properties are, if they're as we think they are.
In relation to the trenches we've got already.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you've already done that with one map. That's what we've been doing for the last 2 days.
Yeah. Look, this is a proper plan rather than perspectives.
OK, so precisely how do you do this?
Well, we need Henry to work that out and Stuart to actually relate one map to another one. Yeah. And then we need to take a decision, you know, which ones we go for. It may be that we abandon some of the trenches we've got and start somewhere else.
And this is tomorrow?
Yeah, it'll have to be tomorrow now.
So, will this map tell us that we've been digging in the wrong place? And if so, is it going to show us where our lost village is? Beginning of day three, and almost the final thing that happened last night before we all went home, was that we discovered an old map of our lost village on the back of a drawing from around the year 1700. At last, it appeared to offer us the opportunity to do some real precision archaeology and hopefully actually get down on the buildings from our village. But have we got precision archaeology? No, we've got this. Why? Why?
Look, you'll get it. And this is precision archaeology. We just need a large area to see a lot more.
But last night you said to me that with the use of the map we could actually get down on real discrete pieces, corners of walls and things. Well, that's not this, is it?
No, but we're going to get that. We've got a problem with the map. We've got a problem with scaling the original map onto the modern map, because although there's a scale on the old map, we can't work out what it is.
So basically it's not ready yet?
It's not ready yet.
So this is desperation while we're waiting?
No, this is another strategy. We need a reasonable size area so we can see all the different stains and colours in the ground. And actually, that will help us with the map.
How?
Because if we can get a definite line, we've already got a wall coming out here, look. If we can find the corner of this and we know that's on the map, that will help us to tie in the map. And then we can be more precise about where we are out in the sort of public area over there.
Make my day, show me a wall.
Where Bridget is there, you see all that stonework coming across? And she's got 16th century pottery in amongst it. That's probably the foundations of the end wall of that house on the 1694 map.
Can I get in?
Yeah. Just watch the machine, that end.
A wall. Our first village wall. At least our first definite one. After so many false starts, we may at last have found the village in the walled garden. But until we lock the new map down, we won't know if our other trenches are in the right place. But unlocking the secrets of the new map is testing Stuart's expertise and everyone else's patience.
Is he not just compounding the error, as Henry's saying?
No, this is not doing anything clever.
In terms of finding our house plots, be more accurate at this end.
I'm just doing very simple stuff. I'm not trying to be difficult.
But you've already said that the 1694 map was not about getting accuracy here, it's about accuracy in the bigger scheme.
It still shows a degree of accuracy.
I'm happy with that. All we've got to go on is
this,
just
this is a few secularities.
This just fine-tunes exactly where we were digging.
You mean almost exactly?
Over on the north lawn, trench 5 was opened to look for the church.
But that is not the corner of a church.
So what do you think you have got there?
I'm not sure. I mean, I've been sort of pondering whether we could be perhaps looking at sort of like a field drain, but then I'm not sure that there's enough silt between the stones for it to be a field drain.
It does look like that. It looks like something with, with boulders in to convey the water away, doesn't it?
So, I mean, where is
I think this is the problem, isn't it? Wherever we look and put a hole in, the geophysics might look good, the map evidence might look good. You know, there's nothing there. If there was a church here, how could it have disappeared so thoroughly?
Yes.
With no stones left.
This site's proving a real test for the archaeologists. It seems like the deeper we go, the less traces there are of our lost village. It looks now as though it wasn't just demolished, but the whole thing was carted away. This morning at 9 o'clock, we were supposed to have our map, which would be our last throw at finding whatever remained. It's 11:10 now, and they've just finished the work. So, Stuart, is this going to help us?
What we've done, there's been a lot of angst this morning, I have to say, trying to get all these things together, but we've managed to overlay this new map against the 1694 map, and we've got a really good degree of correlation.
Trench 1, looking for the old castle outbuildings, seems to have missed everything, ending up in the middle of the road. Trench 2, where we thought we'd found the road, just missed a village house. However, Trench 3 in the walled garden hit the bullseye and is across Ralph Kendall's house. Trench 4, looking for George Campbellman's house, came close. Trench 5, trying to locate the church, missed by a country mile. So where do we focus our limited resources now?
Our best bit, I think, is the one that here that Phil's been digging, because you can see that by lengthening that a bit and widening it a bit, we actually do get right across, right where we're sitting, right across this main building with the other named tenant in it.
John, I remember a chat that went on about 14 hours ago when you wanted to put the trench for the church in one place, Stuart wanted to put it in the other. It seems to me that the place where we've put your trench misses it.
Well, the church keeps on moving.
Yes.
Every time there's new map evidence, the church moves. But the thing is, it's now moved into a location that corresponds with the geophysics. Originally, it was here.
That's where Stuart wanted it, wasn't it?
Yeah, but this is the imprint from the new map in blue. Now, look at the geophysics target we've got here. Mm. And the geophysics in black here corresponds so well.
So what we're thinking of is putting a trench at that point there, then it hits not only the geophysics but also the outline of the from the map. So whichever is right, we should do that.
Well, that's fine, but you've just taken all the diggers away from here and put them over to there, and it's now nearly 9:15.
Well, we're going to have to bring some of them back to deturf that, because we can't do that with a machine. Whereas this bit here, we can deturf it and then we can use the machine. So we're going to have to move people around for the next hour while we get the turf off.
David and an army of diggers are opening another trench on the north lawn, our sixth, in a renewed search for the church. Phil's going to widen trench 4 to include the area where Stuart says George Campbellman's house is. Carenza's found the church in the incident room in the records. The canons of Kirkham Priory, about 10 miles away, administered the church at Henderskelf after it was founded in about 1160.
So effectively, the Lord gave some land for a church, presumably paid for it to be built, and then asked the monks, asked the canons to provide a priest to say mass there, presumably for the Lord and the people in the village.
Yes, that's right. It would do all the usual services for the whole of the village. It refers to divine service in the church or chapel.
And do we think the church would have had full rites of baptism, marriage and burial?
Well, that's a little bit more difficult to say, because it refers to the mother church of Crome, which is about 5 miles down the road here. So normally marriages were reserved to the mother church and baptisms and burials were done in the local church. If it was going to be a chapel of ease, that is.
Well, how would you define a chapel of ease?
A chapel of ease is a chapel which is distant from the parish church, but which allows the inhabitants of a village to get to divine service at least once a week very easily, and to do their emergency things like baptisms and burials. Those two rites have to be done very quickly, whereas marriages, of course, you can wait normally.
It's quite possible that the village was laid out when the church was founded in 1160. Even though it was recorded in the Domesday Book 80 years before and had a Viking name, Henderskelf was probably only a farmstead then and didn't become a village until the 12th century. Has our aim improved in the new trench looking for the church?
Well, there's not much sign of a church there, David, is there?
No, not at all, not unless you're looking for a geological church.
Right, I mean, it's remarkable how little there is in that trench.
Yes, it's incredible how much earth you can move and find absolutely nothing.
But very colourful.
The whole village, church and all, seems to have been purged to create a landscape fit for 18th century taste. Stuart now thinks that the process of removing the village of Henderskelf began even before the third Earl decided he wanted a new mansion.
You see this big enclosure here?
Yeah.
Has actually crossed the road. It effectively blocks it off.
Yeah, extraordinary that they should make everybody go round the castle and the church when they cut that bit off.
I mean, it looks as if it's a garden attached to the house that was here before Castle Howard. And in a way, this looks as if it's got rid of the houses that were in those plots.
Yeah. And presumably this is the beginning of creating a nice landscape and a garden for the big house.
It's almost just the beginning of the end for the village, really.
Carenza struck gold in the archives. She can now put some life into the house that we're revealing in the walled garden, once the home of Ralph Kendall and his forebears.
And they seem to have been the village Grundys.
Like in the Archers?
Yes.
In what way?
Well, they're complete reprobates, certainly in the 17th century. In the 1630s and 1640s, there's Philip, well, I was going to say Grundy, Philip Kendall, who's probably the father or the grandfather of Ralph Kendall, who's recorded here. And he is constantly in trouble, up in front of the manorial court.
What sort of things?
Mostly illegal games.
What does that mean? What sort of games?
Apparently it's mostly things like playing cards or skittles, all sort of pub games, but on a Sunday or at the wrong time of day when you weren't supposed to be doing that sort of thing. And he also gets done for stealing one of the Lord's deer, albeit a dead one, but taking it away, cutting it up, cooking it and eating it, which the Lord was not have been very pleased about.
We may not have found any actual structures, but we've certainly got a glimpse of the wealth of the inhabitants of Henderskelf from the finds. They include fine, locally made Rydale ware, such as this jug, pottery imported from Stoke-on-Trent, like this posset pot, and these sherds from a local copy of high-quality 15th-century northern French ware. These things that look like large twiglets were door hinges, either from high-status homes or the castle itself. Finally, there are intriguing clues to the origins of the village.
These two here, they're the earliest pieces. They're Staxton ware. Do you notice how abraded these are?
Yeah.
So they've been kicking around in the plough soil?
That's the idea, that maybe these actually predate the village.
Oh, right.
And this sort of pottery wasn't made till about 1150.
If Alan's theory is right, then this confirms that the settlement didn't become a village until around 1160, when the church was built. In Trench 4, looking for the Campbellman residence, Phil's been all over the place. First he had a house, then he didn't. Where are we now?
Could this be mortar?
It could well be actually part of the demolition of the base of the walls, yeah.
I knew I could rely on you to find me a house.
But you said to us that you didn't want us just to find the buildings, although you wanted that. You wanted to know something about the people who lived here as well.
Yes, I do.
How have we done?
We've done really well, actually. It's a huge amount of information. So I'll just talk about one family. They're Campbellmans, George Campbellman and Bartholomew Campbellman.
Have you heard of the Campbellmans?
I don't know them, but I know the name Bartholomew. It's my middle name.
And were they here?
George Campbellman lived in this property here. Quite wealthy, quite well-to-do, and it's really nice that we found this pottery from that very trench. And you can see it's really fine, really nice glazed stuff. Quite expensive.
Beautifully made, isn't it?
It is. It's a drinking vessel. We found lots of bottles as well. So clearly quite expensive, and George Campbellman is well-to-do. He moves out of the village fairly soon. By 1732, he's in Ganthorpe, and his house, his rental, is £14.
Oh, that's a heck of a lot, isn't it?
That's a hell of a lot of rent in those days.
The house that George Campbellman left behind may well have looked like this. A long, single-storied building constructed of stone, whitewashed at the front, with a thatched roof and two chimneys.
So next there's Bartholomew Campbellman, old Bartholomew, I think, if you don't mind that. He lives out the rest of his days in the village. 1717, he dies. He's listed as of Henderskelf, so the third Earl didn't throw him out. He allowed him to finish his days in the village.
Significantly, this means that the village wasn't all demolished overnight. Some houses were still standing nearly 20 years after building had begun on the castle, but we've been able to find the footprint of only one of them. In the walled garden, Bridget is standing in what we're now sure was Ralph Kendall's house.
We're virtually at the end of day three now. What do we reckon we've got in here?
We have got a building here, we've got two walls, we've got the road behind us.
You look like an air hostess doing
that. Why, thank you. We come up here, we come to a doorway, yeah. We've got the door mechanism here. We come through the door into the main body of the house. Over here, we've got rubble fill left over from the foundations of that house. And we've also got some really nice finds out of the matrix of the building. Yeah. You know, about 16th century, really high status stuff, really.
So do you think this was quite a high status building?
I think it definitely was a high status building, and it's, you know, the structure goes to prove it, I think.
We think this is what Ralph Kendall would have called home. And this is probably how the village would have appeared when he left it. All the same, Mick. One building, or the remnants of one building, it's not much, is it?
Well, they've not only got rid of the buildings, they've removed the sites of them, haven't they? It reminds me of a couple of other historical events. One's the dissolution of the monasteries under Henry VIII, where they got rid of the roofs, they burnt the timbers, they melted the lead down. There was no way those monks were ever going back, even 10 years later.
What's the other thing?
Well, and the other one is getting rid of the railways under Beeching in the 60s, where they not only stopped the railways, but they took the rails away, they took the sleepers away, they took the whole infrastructure away. And they did the same here. The people who lived here wouldn't even have known where their house or their garden was once they'd done this. It's a real social statement, the real ending of people living on this site in the village.
Henderskelf probably first saw light as a Viking settlement, which was recorded in the Domesday Book. Built in the later 12th century, the village survived 5.5 centuries of turbulent English history. It was only demolished between 1700 and 1720 to make way for one of the most prominent stately homes in Britain. The third Earl made this landscape his own, wiping out almost all traces of previous occupation.
Your ancestors did a pretty ruthless job of demolishing that village, didn't they?
They certainly did. Look what they built in its place.
How did you feel about the last 3 days?
I have to say, I think it's been fascinating. I mean, what you've uncovered and the amount of work that's gone into all the work with the maps, it's been fascinating because for some time we wanted to know about the village and the castle and so forth, and it's given us that extra spur to go on and find out more, I think, and that's the encouraging thing.
Well, thanks for having us.
Pleasure.
3 days ago, I came here looking for a village, and I was expecting roofs and doors and windows, but we didn't find them. And yet we have found the village. We found it through the maps, the pottery, the fixtures and fittings, and most importantly, through the lives of the ordinary people who lived here.